Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Make a difference. Relish a great work-life balance. Enjoy generous benefits and competitive pay. Go home each night feeling fulfilled by your work. Work for an employer of choice. Work for Blue Ridge Hospice. We're always looking to hire compassionate RNs, CNAs, or anyone interested in office or thrift shop work. We've been your not-for-profit community hospice since 1981. Visit our website for more information or to apply today at blueridgehospice.org. That's blueridgehospice.org. Blue Ridge Hospice is an equal opportunity employer.
Hello, I'm Claire from Wild Ginger Running, the trail and ultra running YouTube channel, and this is the podcast version of my weekly live chat with an athlete, coach, or other running expert. The link to the original film on YouTube is in the show notes. Check out my Instagram and YouTube channel for more training advice, inspiration and gear reviews. Everything is Wild Ginger Running, and my blog is wildgingerrunning.co.uk. Support me on Patreon if you enjoy this free advice at patreon.com/wildgingerrunning. Enjoy this podcast and see you next week for more.
Good evening and Hello. Welcome to the Scotney Wild Ginger Takeover. It's great to have you along with us this evening. Hope you're joining us live on YouTube, or if you're taking us out on your run on a podcast or listening to us on the podcast, it's great to have you along this evening. And it's the beginning of March, and there's one or two changes happening. There's kind of some restrictions of lockdown going to be happening at the end of the month, and races look like they're going to be starting to happen as well, and things getting booked.
Are they? Yeah. Have you booked anything?
Well, yeah, I've actually booked a haircut. I've booked my first haircut. Those who have maybe been watching us every week can see that I'm kind of getting that Robinson Crusoe look going a bit more and more, and getting even a mullet. I think I might even be heading back into the 80s with a mullet. So, but yeah, so I've got something booked in for April.
Good, because my haircuts are usually DNS, because then lockdown happens and I can't get that.
Well, hopefully you can get one booked in. And talking about bookings, who have we got booked tonight?
Oh, that's terrible.
But you never know, we might get booked for some other work through this.
Is this where I pull out the book with her on the front cover?
Oh, I know. This is how many book puns can we get in
it
the first
year? It is Joe Meek.
Yay, good evening, Joe.
Evening, the Scotney. Thank
I'm sorry you
having
have to
me
put
on.
Up with that,
oh, hang on a second. We've suddenly lost sound, though. Oh, no. We had some difficulties before we came on. And have we lost sound?
No.
Again?
Oh, here I we go. I can hear Joe.
Yeah. We can hear you now. Excellent. I think it's my little earpiece, I can't hear you.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us this evening.
Me on.
You're welcome. Where are you at the moment?
I am in Bath. So I work 2 days a week in Bath. So I drive up on a Wednesday night and work Thursday, Friday, and then go home on Friday night.
And what work is that?
So I'm a physio. Most of the time I'm self-employed, but I am employed by the English Institute of Sport up in Bath. Thursday, Friday, I took the job 18 months ago with a view of the Olympics happening. Obviously, we think they're still happening, but we're not sure. So I've been working up here with all the guys that are preparing for that. So it's been a really good experience. It's hard work, but it's a good experience.
Brilliant, excellent. And we didn't really give you a proper introduction.
I was going to say, like, after months of fluffing it, I actually prepared an introduction and you just skipped it.
I'm sorry.
Whereas normally you put me on the spot and go, who have we got? And I have to remember it all.
Just keeping you on your toes, showing this is live. You know, this is a good evening for all of those who are joining us live already. We've got Sebastian, John, Paul and John. So let's introduce our guest properly then. Joe Meek.
Great British runner, and yeah, a just amazing list of races, because it seems like you can do anything and also have been all over the world. So I think I made a note of you're fourth at the 100K World Championships, you're seventh at the World Trail Championships, you've podiumed at MDS, CCC, and one Coastal Challenge. You know that race?
Yeah, I know the Coastal Challenge really well. I've done it twice. Once, kind of.
I saw you absolutely smash the field at the Lakeland 50 one year in a very hot race. And yeah, there's just so many all across the world.
Indeed. I mean, the first time we met was going across to Turkey, wasn't it, Jo?
Oh, yeah. So I think that's another podium that I haven't mentioned.
First trip.
Oh, hang on. We've put the photo up, the band photo. Ian Corliss took a little group of Brits out there.
First trips away, but what a great race. A really good experience for racing abroad. Yeah, it's really well put on, isn't it? Isn't it culture, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's 2014. It was one of my first experiences of racing abroad. And yeah, we're so well looked after. We even had our own driver, didn't we?
We did have all bodyguard, whichever way you want to look at it.
Yeah, wasn't even Mayor's driver as well.
The night before was pasta with nuts on top and ketchup. So it was a unique meal.
Anyway, yeah. Marcus arrived home having won his weight in olives. And so it just reminds me of olives because we had them for months.
But I also came home with rhabdomyolysis as well. With very
severe. I remember that. I remember hearing you really ill afterwards. I was like, wow, that's a shocker.
Kidney failure. But yeah, so that's us on tour. On the other, so it was the first time I got to know you, and you were kind of just kind of flourishing into ultra running, but you also had one or two scrapes on your face. You looked like you'd been in some fight. You'd had an accident.
I'd literally just managed to fall off the treadmill, and where most people might want to put their arms down, I thought I'd just go face first and manage to just get the whole shebang, knees, elbows and face.
Wow. Yeah. I'm like terrified of treadmills for this reason, and everybody always says, oh no, nobody falls off treadmills.
I've fallen off twice. It's a right shocker.
I mean, we'll probably talk about treadmills a bit more as we talk about some of your training because of what we see you post on Instagram. But we've kind of jumped ahead to kind of 2014 and heading out to Iznik and looking like this fantastic kind of boy-girl band with kind of Tracy Dean, Robbie Britton and Stuart Eyre, and you and myself standing on these rocks looking very like we're about to drop our next album.
You don't look like that.
I look more like a Boy Scout,
you
I think,
look like
actually.
You're on a little trip.
I think actually that was also because John came out, my husband came out as well, and John he had a great race there, and the first time I kind of met Ian Corliss as well because he was out there. So yeah, it was meeting a lot of people that I've stayed in contact for since. It was brilliant. It was a really good start.
It was a great race, and yeah, it was the first time I got to know Ian really well. And as you say, the hospitality, I mean, Iznik still takes place and they've changed the route quite a bit, but it was a real festival of running, wasn't it? Because there was the big kind of 160, it was about an 80 mile race, so maybe less than 160. You did was it 100k or was it
80k, yeah.
Which you won outright as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I don't know whether that says more about the standard of the elite runners that are out there rather than what I do.
No.
Looking back, actually, I did manage to hold quite a decent pace for that. It was really runnable, to be fair. Mm. I can't remember what the elevation was, but it suited me. So basically, runnable trails, perfect.
And so how did you get involved in that race? How did Ian invite you out? What had you been doing up to that point?
So off the back of MDS, where I was second and no one knew me at all. I mean, I'd been running for years, just road running. Off the back of that, I got loads of invites. So that was 2014. And then was Iznik 2014 as well? Was it 2015?
It
would have been
2014, wasn't it?
I'm Easter sure. time anyway, wasn't it? Yeah. So it can't have been the same year. Probably like the year after.
Off the back of that, I got invites to other races, and that was one of them.
Brilliant.
I think I did well in 2014 and then did well in 2015 and literally did like 13 ultras in 11 months or something, and then had to have 6 months off. They completely overcooked it. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Yeah, I'll go to this race and that race, and then learn that actually your body does catch up with you at some stage.
So a bit kind of like being in the candy shop.
Yeah, it was completely, and I didn't want to miss out on any opportunity just in case no one ever asked me again.
so how did you get end up doing MDS? So we've mentioned you're a physio. Have you always been doing physio?
It was literally just John and I, it was on our bucket list, and he was like, before I retire from running, I think, you know, we should do it. Obviously, that's a complete joke, because every year since then, he's done an ultra or two. No, 56 now, still has no intention of retiring. So we said, well, if we're going to do it, we'll do it together, because it's expensive. It's like $3,000 each. So we saved up quite a lot and quite hard for it, and thought, well, if we're going to spend that much on a race, we're going to train for it. We really dedicated the 16-week block out, 12-week block out to train for it, and went for it. I took it completely seriously. I managed to get hold of a heat chamber at the local uni, which was a complete pain in the ass because you have to fit in the right hours, go to work, go to there, and I take loads of leave to do it all, but it paid off. And then from there, a second, and it was really competitive. It wasn't like it was a not competitive year, which mainly happens with my races. Like, I came second in the cross-country nationals once because no one else turned up. It was amazing.
I'm going to put the brakes on there. So before I was an ultra runner, I used to do a lot of road running and cross-country. And I have to make the confess, I never went to the nationals because I was so scared. I went to the Midland Championships and the regional and Birmingham, but I never went to the nationals because I was so scared of how fast and competitive it was. So what year did you come second?
I can't even remember that now. I'm not very good looking back at the dates.
Where was it? Can you remember where it was?
It was Parliament Hill behind Hayley Yelling. So that slowed people down a lot because it was so boggy and muddy.
Yeah.
And then Hayley Yelling, and then, yeah, me. But I look back and I think, well, where was everyone else? Because it literally came out of the blue. They didn't even spell my name right in the results.
How did they misspell them? What, with an E or with an A in meat?
Well,
or...
so at the time I was not married, it was Kelsey, and I think they put Kelsex. I mean, I like sex, but it's not my
name. Hang on a second, that's a bit of an admission we don't need on that.
Well, who doesn't? I mean,
right. Very true. So there's a good pedigree in you. I mean,
well,
so
there was an England best later, wasn't there? And...
Well, it's been, we've had international.
Our 20s.
Yeah. I did a 2:46 marathon. In hindsight, I could probably have run faster, but hindsight's a wonderful thing, and I left it all in training most of the time. You only realise that when you look back.
You were approaching MDS, and you said that you put everything into training, was it marathon training that you'd prominently been doing before? Is that the training that you knew?
No, it's all the training I knew, so that's all I did. And interestingly, I lost MDS on the long day. So... who won it that year? That was Megan, who does I Run Far?
Megan Hicks.
Megan Hicks won it. I mean, that was her fifth year in doing it. She was hell-bent on going to win it, and, you know, she had good pedigree, good experience. She put about an hour into me on that day. I managed to catch about 20 minutes back up on the marathon the day after, but, yeah, it was done, yeah. So, yeah, I just didn't have that insight into, you know, running through the night. Stupidly, I carried one of those really tiny Petzl e-lights. I couldn't see a bloody thing. I had to by my knees to see where I was going, and I thought, oh, it's really lightweight. Didn't actually realise I'd have to use it properly, you know.
It's fine. Marcus did that a few years ago at Cappadocia. Which is another one that you've podiumed at as well, which we missed out.
MDS I lost on the long day, so I everything else was great, really, to be honest. And then so after the MDS, it opened up. There's us thinking, oh, that's the only ultra we'd heard of. It opened up a whole world of, it's like a rabbit warren of other races to do. So yeah, we've been working our way. I don't often do a race twice unless I DNF, and then I've got to go back and have another go.
I was just thinking about that you don't seem to repeat races, but having the experience that you do now in terms of the training that you do for MDS, are you tempted with that one again?
Yeah, I would love to go back and give it a go, but it is expensive, and if you're going to spend your money, then there's other races out there. So yeah, I've sort of put that.
And would John insist on coming with you for that one?
There's also that thing where you think you'd do better because you've done well there, but actually, you know, the competition's always changing, and you just can't guarantee who's going to turn up. So maybe just take away the fantastic memories and put it to bed. There's no guarantee that I could come 10th, and I'd be devastated with that. You spend $5,000 and it's still good, but I would only go there to try and win it. So, and I don't think you can set that as your goal really on that sort of race. But
yeah, and MDS has been rolled over again. I was meant to do it last year. I was meant to be doing it this year, and it's now moved to October, but I can't do it because I've got a race in September. I've got to wait till next year. I feel like I'm in perpetual MDS training every winter.
3 years.
Physio-wise, that you coach and he's training for it as well. And I felt so bad when I heard the news because that's all he's training for.
So Alex has had this like prolonged period of like, oh, I'm back on. But then it's good, you know, I mean, it's like, it's always better to have these longer periods to build up to these races and kind of short build up. So you obviously got a lot of kind of natural talent and speed there. Was that always there when you were younger?
No,
were you always...
I really disagree with that. I work really hard, but as to natural talent and natural speed, it isn't there at all. You know, you look at people like Ruth Croft, that she's got a lot of natural talent and speed. She's just done a 2:34 marathon and hoping to improve on that, you know. And yet she can then, so talented, she can go and run CCC as her like first ultra and win it, you know. I think I've just been running a long time. So I've been running since I was sort of 18. And I think with that just becomes a natural economy. You do become efficient. Speeds I always have to chip away at. I didn't really do sport as a kid, so there's not much talent coming from there. But I do work really hard at it, for sure. What I've got is a stubborn mindset, I think, like the ultra runners. But
and does that go back to when you were a child as well?
Yeah, probably. I don't know where it comes from at all, to be honest. It's really innate in me. There's two things. One, I'm stubborn, but two, I'm really intrinsically motivated. I don't need much else to motivate me. You know, I like running for the sake of it, but people say you could just run and not do the hard sessions, but I'm really motivated to do them. I don't know. I still get nervous about them, but you know, it's I like to push. I think just like to see what I can do.
So how's it been in lockdown when you presumably last year you just had your whole race calendar cancelled?
Well, I tried to get a Western States golden ticket. I went to America in February, Black Canyon 100K, and didn't get it, missed out. So then that was the only race I did last year. So what I did after that, I had a bit of a niggle, so I addressed it properly and got over it, and then just used the rest of the year for some consistent training and also really to get to know Dartmoor. And then off the back of that, I did that FKT. And since then, I've just stuck. It's easy to marathon train, so I've just stuck to marathon training and hope to do a marathon before I go back into the trails. But I don't know whether that will happen or not.
Shall we talk about the Dartmoor then? That all round, because that was had that always been, I mean, cause you,
so honestly, I hadn't heard of it at all. I grew up on Dartmoor, but I was a road runner then, and it just stuck to the roads, and then came back sort of 2 years ago. So over lockdown, we were like, right, let's get to know it, let's cross it, north to west, east to south, etc. And then someone said, oh, 20 years ago, this bloke ran around it. And I'm like, oh, that sounds my thing. And then went to Recce at Moor and did all the routes and spoke to the guy that did it, Nigel Jenkins, and and then met the people that had previously had a go at breaking it, and I thought, no, I can do this, and I can do it better than they have, just because I'm quite pedantic about my logistics, and they just scuffed it, you know, they just gone out, buried food, and then run round, and
And doesn't it kind of start and finish at a pub as well? Just
yeah. Although interesting, I've since found out that you start and finish at the tour and then walk to the pub. The semantics of ways, but for me it was great because it meant everyone could have a pint and some chips at the end. So and half of it was just getting the community together. So finishing at a pub was spot on, really. So that was great. I took a long time to recce it, know it really well, asked for people to join me, but everyone was really up for it. On every recce, the weather was absolutely stunning, and then the day I do it, and the weather was shite. It was like running through pea soup. It was terrible. It did clear up, and then
hear
rain.
I don't know if we're having some sound difficulties on your side.
I can hear you now.
We can hear you now. Yeah, I don't know if it's on your side of things, Joe, or our side, but that sound was just dropping out there.
So you're talking about getting the community together for it, and then we dropped out.
Yeah, and it worked really well. It was great, and then.
So this was August last year, just fitting in between some of the restrictions that we had.
Yeah, but it took about 2 months to recce it and, pull it off. And then I chose the worst day ever for it.
We've got quite a dramatic photo, actually, of you. It looks absolutely horrendous weather.
It was like pea soup and rain.
Were you going into the night?
Yeah, no, I started at 4 a.m. and then finished.
Oh, we seem to have lost sound again. I don't know if it's on our...
Definitely not this end, because I can hear you really well.
We don't know if Rose listened to us live.
We can hear you
Karen.
Now.
I don't know if it's on our headsets or...
Sorry, so I was just saying, were you going into the night there at the end?
No, I started at 4 a.m. and then finished.
You have to finish for, at the pub, don't you?
Exactly.
And is this your kind of standard approach for races in this meticulous planning and reccing? Is that what you would prefer to do for all races? Because
I imagine it's
hard if you're racing all over the world to do that.
Yeah, and sometimes I don't mind the element of surprise and let's just go with it. But if you can recce it, I mean, that was an FKT. I had to recce it. I had to know the route like the back of my hand. But on the whole, I just go and run,
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, sorry, we are having a bit of technical difficulties tonight in that.
Quite here.
Yeah, it sounds like it's coming through to Skype, but we're not getting on through to,
And it's only us that's having this problem, apparently, from the comments from the people live. I'm so sorry, everyone.
Thanks for those who are, brilliant. It's just on my headset. Okay, right. Brilliant. Fantastic.
Right, you don't need to rub it in, everyone.
Right, okay, we might have to ditch our headsets and might get a bit of echo, but we'll see. We'll plough on for a little bit and see what happens. Right, so should we just... let's go. Okay.
Go for it.
Yeah, so you had this fantastic kind of dry spell leading up to the FKT.
Yeah, and then the weather on the FKT was abysmal. I mean, I had recced it really well, but there's still some points where you question, have you taken the right line? Because it's just a sheep track. But in the end, I probably only lost 10, 15 minutes at various stages on the whole. And by the end of it, whenever we got to the pub, it was glorious. So at least that was the main thing.
Brilliant. I mean, because it's got some quite... I mean, having read the report in Ali Bevan's book... which I can bring a picture up of. It's got quite hairy kind of river crossings in places, isn't it?
Yeah, no, they were. They were really deep because the rivers rise and fall really quickly. So you could go there 2 hours later and it would be, at knee height. And I was really worried about drowning the tracker, which was in my short pocket. So that's how deep it was.
Yeah.
It was pretty much up to my waist. On a couple of crossings, but on the whole, it's fine.
Cool.
To be honest.
We've taken our headsets off.
Yeah, sorry, we kept asking a question and couldn't hear the response, which wasn't ideal.
So we hope people who are maybe listening might be a bit of an echo. We apologise, but we can't hear your answers, and it can be a very long interview. We keep going, oh, what was your answer again? If everybody else who's listening in on this is going, oh, we can hear Joe perfectly.
And the idea of the round, was it that... Nigel Jenkins had done like the Bob Graham and was looking for something
similar. It was the eve of the millennium and he was like, I'm just going to run around Dartmoor.
Okay.
The same, like that, but he obviously put some prep into it because the tours he chose, and it was New Year's Eve, so the winter crossing, so he had to use ropes for rivers and stuff like that, so he had put some thought into it. But yeah, it was just a challenge to get back before closing time, really.
We've got a question coming in from one of the people watching live, Paul Feely, saying, did you recce the course during the night?
I did do one night recce, but most of the time it was daylight, to be honest. The actual route wasn't too difficult. Where I got stuck, and this was me being stupid really, was because I'd recce'd it so well, I didn't take a map. I took a compass, but I didn't take a map. So when the pea soup was there, I was like, this is just, I'm just going to have to go on the best bearing I can remember, which was not brilliant. My sense of direction is rubbish as well. So although I can map read, my sense of direction is poor. So there was one stage where John fed me and then sent me off, and 2 minutes later I came back because I'd literally just looped back on myself because I couldn't see anything. And also, I just got disorientated. But after that, I was fine.
Brilliant. Because Dartmoor is quite featureless, isn't it? It's, yeah, you say it's kind
of featureless, and there's just a lot of bog and wet, and unless you can pick up something that you recognise, it's pretty difficult.
And are you still out training on that route?
Yeah, at the moment,
terrain,
like,
or have you just, did you have enough of it from that one night?
No, I mean, I've been out bits on it. I've been quite selective. If it's been absolutely raining, then the Dartmoor's pretty miserable, you know, just ploughing through mud. We've got some really good trails down by a river, which I use quite a lot. I've been pretty lucky in that respect. So, and obviously, as you said, you've mentioned, I've been using a treadmill a bit more than I probably normally would. Just to, you know, sometimes you just want to get a quality session in, and that's the only way, especially with the ice. I fell over on the ice three weeks ago. So that, I'm too old for that sort of shit.
You seem to kind of go on a bike as well. Is that something that you specifically do for cross training, or have I just happened to see when
now,
you've been out?
I do bike a bit. Like, I have a turbo set up at home, but really it's if I'm injured, I'll go on the bike. I don't often train twice a day, so I wouldn't then run and then bike. I do commute on a bike a little bit, so when I'm in Bath I commute, but the commute's tiny, a couple of miles. So, but yeah, no, I do go out on a bike a bit. In September, a friend and I cycled the North Coast 500 in Scotland just because we could, you know, we thought, why not? It would be brilliant. So yeah, if there's an opportunity. But you know, that's the brilliant thing about being fit from running, you can sort of just transfer it across, can't you, to enjoy other stuff.
And you mentioned there about being injured, and I kind of just assume that as a physio, well, you couldn't possibly be injured because you'd see something happening in the the second something didn't feel right, but does it not work like that?
And also you get too emotionally involved, so I've got a tendency to think something, and as soon as I think of it, I think the worst thing ever, you know, literally, oh my god, I've got a slight pain in my heel, oh my god, I must have an Achilles problem. Well, I've never had an Achilles problem, so why would I get that, you know? And you rub it and it goes. So you tend to think the worst, and then you think, oh, I'll just run through this for a bit. And by the time you've finished 6 weeks later, you really do have a problem. So it's either or. So actually, if I feel like I'm getting injured, I do go and see someone else. I also get a massage every 2 weeks, so I can keep on top of stuff, which I think, you know, running's not that an expensive sport, so a massage isn't too much of a luxury, really.
And do you do anything else?
I do gym work. I do a bit. I say a bit. I mean, at the moment, once a week at home because there's no gyms open. But gym work and trunk work. But no, that's it really. Run. Yeah. No, run mainly.
And as a physio, are there any tips that you can give people to kind of prevent injuries?
I literally couldn't say enough. You should do gym work. Be strong. Really don't, and you know, the amount of people I get in, I see a lot of runners and they just don't have good stability, and it's not difficult to get. I mean, maybe get it off the back of an assessment with someone, personal trainer or whoever, but yeah, I would say keeping strong, you can't underestimate the power of that, really.
So just going back to that year that you had after MDS, and you said that you did a crazy number of races. What was your next race after MDS?
Well, Isnik would have been in there. I did the Coastal Challenge in Costa Rica.
And won that, and I think got a course record at that.
I was, again, really, because that was the first offer of a race, so I was really determined with that, so I used Heat Chamber again, and Anna Frost was there, but she couldn't race. And then I met a few other people, Mike Wardian and stuff. That was pretty cool. So there was a race like in the Mourne Mountains, which was good. It's Stevie Kramer, who had a good battle, but she got the edge on me. Loads of world champs come there. So the 100K in Doha might have come up the back of that year. And that was great, but it was all on, it wasn't just tarmac, it was like granite slabs.
Yeah, it was all kind of a cobblestone one, wasn't it, that year? I remember hearing all the feedback. Yeah,
slabs, really hard on the body, and that was 20 laps of a 5K loop.
And had you run further than a marathon on that sort of terrain before, or was that quite a big step up for you?
No, I think that was a big step up. I'm trying to remember when I did Comrades, because whether that was before or after, I'm not great with my history. I must say. I think I remember stuff, but I never tend
Quick, to I'll get the book about you. See if it's in here.
I get a bit lost in it all.
You need a website with all your list of performances on.
Well, I've started doing a blog, and I write about races, but so I can remember, because I don't tend to just retain stuff, so... and then I can look back and remember them all. And I've put, now when I first started writing them, it was really matter of fact. And now you can put a bit of feeling behind it and the photos. And it's really good, actually. I quite like it.
Because Paul Feely, one of Claire's patrons on her Facebook group, asked a question earlier today. So he's obviously gone back to when we interviewed Lizzie Hawker. We listened to Lizzie Hawker's interview, who... again, another amazing female runner like yourself, but she kind of said that in 2005 UTMB victory changed her from being just a competitor to a race winner. And so Paul's asking, did you ever reach that point, Joe, when you suddenly realized it was not just about competing, but that the realism that you could actually win these events? I mean, obviously you were going into a lot of things like MDS already a champion, having come second in the British Cross Country Champion, which I never knew. So there must have already been that kind of spark of light.
I always entered every ultra to be competitive, if I'm honest, but never to assume I'd be a winner, but just to be as competitive as I could be. So from the beginning, I've been that, rather than just complete, the interesting, what can I do? I went in. I could have probably actually been more competitive in the area. So I was a bit taken back, because everyone said, be careful of the heat, be wary of it. And not, so I was, and I probably actually could have pushed a bit harder. But no, I went into it hugely competitively. And I always thought top five would be, great. That's always been there. I don't go into every race thinking I can win, because now the standard, now I'm getting old, but the standard is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, people are running seriously fast off the back of huge, really fast marathons. But I still want to be as competitive as I can be. I haven't got to the stage where I thought, I'll just go and enjoy this. I've made some mistakes. I've entered races where you assume you've still got fitness from a previous few months away, and it isn't there, it does drop off. So I've made mistakes where I've entered a race, set myself up to fail a little bit, but now the races seem to be so few and far between. They've got no excuse. You've got to enter a race fit, haven't you?
So you said that first year you did you was that kind of child in the candy shop. Whoa, look at all these amazing, I'm going to do this race, got invited to this race. But you said you then ended up, what was it, an injury, fatigue, or what? How did that kind of then 6 months manifest itself?
So interestingly, I thought it was an injury. I actually thought it was an iliotibial band injury that hurts around the outside of the knee. And I had, I wasn't really... I just started out as a physio, and also I was completely blinded by the fact I couldn't run. There was nothing else set up. Now I know, just get on a bike and stuff like that. But actually what had happened was there was nothing wrong with me, iliotibial band, and I even got an injection into it. I got injection to the knee. Honestly, it was crazy. Nothing helped. And what I realised was I went to see a chap in Manchester, actually a physio up there, who was a runner in his day, did 2:23, so pretty rapid. I knew he wouldn't tell me to stop. And he treated me, and he was the only one that was pretty ferocious with the treatment. But what we worked out was actually my fascia just got stuck. So probably all those ultras would have been fine, but compounded by the Doha race on the really hard ground, and then not, and then, you know, flying straight home, thinking, oh, I have 2 weeks off, I did no stretching, I did nothing, and then started back running again. Well, I hadn't changed anything. Yeah, I'd rested the system, but I hadn't changed anything, and my fascia just got, and it just manifested as stuck around the knee. So every time I ran, it was a really sharp pain. He did one treatment, and I was pretty black and blue in that area. But literally the next day I was pain free, and I sort of, that took about 4 months to sort out, because everyone just assumes it's, you know, you have an MRI, they say, well, you can see a bit of inflammation, but you'd have inflammation there anyway. Now I know that. So yeah, it was a real good insight into the power of fascia, which we know so much more about now. 6 years down the line, we realize it's our, you know, the skeleton of our nervous system, really. But at the time, no one really talked about it. You know, it was, so yeah, that was, it was a stupid injury. Didn't need to be out for that long if I'd just seen the right person at the right time. But now I know straight away, I get a niggle, go and see someone. Don't sit on it.
But yeah, so, I mean, that's such great advice. And being a former sports therapist, yeah, it's always that. People always wait. I ever just been 2 weeks before their race? You know, they go, oh, and yeah, I've many times had people in the clinic going, oh, I've got this injury, but I've also got a race next Saturday, or I've got Newark Half Marathon. Anyway, but yeah, it's always that, leave it to the last minute.
Well, and the other thing is, people always think that rest will make them better, and ultimately they won't. Body needs movement.
Yeah.
And often we can just change something and it goes, but it's, yeah, you know, we spend 120 quid on shoes, but 40 quid or 50 quid for physio appointment, people are like, oh, but actually, you know, I now do it, you know, it's a really good investment, so. Don't sit on an injury, that's what I'd say.
Definitely, yeah, great advice. So you had that 6 months off, and then, so you then started getting, did you always kind of get regular treatment, or did they again have another period where I've over-raced, I've overcooked this again? Or is that kind of that dark period in the past now, and you're able to?
Yeah, I hope it's the past. I now get obviously regular treatment, but I'm also much better at knowing that I do have a tendency, if I'm going to build up tightness, will be the outside of my thighs, down my quads. So yeah, just making sure I keep on top of that, really. And I'm much better at doing that. I mean, I'm not religious, I'm not a zealot at stretching. I probably stretch twice a week, but I'll give a good hour, you know, watching, at the moment John and I are watching Game of Thrones, so that's a perfect opportunity to bury your head, isn't it, and stretch for a good hour.
is it? I think we're back.
We're back live. Sorry about it, everybody. We are having real technical. Our headphones are not working, and now the broadband, our internet just went down.
So, in terms of choosing races now, Joe, what sort of things do you look at when you're deciding what races to put in your calendar? Well,
on the Facebook group.
That's a different.
Kind of. Can't answer. Can we can tie up question two? So, Arlene on the World Ginger Running.
Can you hear us okay?
Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Excellent. This is the joys of being live, hey? At least Sherlock's not sat between us snoring tonight. He's over on the other chair, but you might be able to hear him snoring in the background. You do want to ask?
I was asking about how you decided what races to do and kind of what attracted you to certain races. But then Marcus reminded me, somebody had already asked that to put to you, which was, what race was your favourite and why, and what events do you have on your bucket list? So slightly different.
Okay, so I tend to choose a race in a country that I'm interested in going to. So sometimes I just look at the country and then find a race in it. So I went to Kazakhstan to do a race, and I've been to Russia.
I think we've got one. Was it in Iran you did a race? I think we had a photo from the Geopark Trail.
So I sent that picture. It was a nightmare. I had to wear full cover in 40 degrees of heat because women had to fully cover up.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's a disadvantage to the males that didn't have
to. Yeah, men were in shorts and singlets. And then I was dying, and I was so sick for like 3 days afterwards, completely annihilated myself with heat stroke. Yeah, literally, I flew out of Iran, went to Dubai, and I was staying with a friend, and I was still being ill. Oh, it wiped me out for ages. And I actually thought I'd done some serious heat stroke damage, but I went to get tested, actually, blood tests, and they were fine. So, Yeah, so no, I choose the country, but don't get me wrong, I don't want to shy away from the competition. Having said that, in every race I've been to abroad, I think I've still been annihilated. There's some seriously good runners that don't make the world circuit. And they just race in their own country. So in terms of favourite races, I really like the Coastal Challenge. I mean, that's a pretty special place. Just incredible. We had a holiday afterwards for a week and I just topped it off. It was amazing. And it was, you know, really good and competitive. But then I did the Golden Ring Ultra in Russia, which was really good as well, just because it was so different. I always wanted to go to Russia, and it was, In terms of bucket list races, I'd really like to do Western States, but the chance of getting in are probably pretty low, so I might have to suck that one up and just accept that it's not meant to be. I like the races with good atmosphere where you meet like-minded people, so I do like the UTMB week.
One that you have gone back to a few times, isn't it?
Yeah, so I did the CCC and was delighted, and then you think, oh, I'll give a go at doing the extra 70k. It's a whole different world. Oh my goodness, the world just fell off.
So we've got a photo of you finishing that. Was that when you finished second at the CCC?
Yeah, CCC, that was incredible. It wasn't expected, but you know, you look back, training had gone really well, I tapered perfectly. I'd recce'd it, so I knew it well. Yeah, it was brilliant.
And where were you living at the time for that?
In Hampshire.
That famous mountainous.
Yeah, really. So I did all my uphill running on treadmills.
Really?
We both said that together. What gradient were you hitting your treadmill?
Yeah, varied it. But most of uphill running was on a treadmill. And then I did go out and do a recce about 3 or 4 weeks prior to it. But I did it in slow time. So I know they do recce. Well, I've done it, UTMB recces, in like 3 or 4 days. But I think I did sea recce in 3 or 4 days. And in fact, I camped out overnight, a wild camped, it was brilliant. Just 20 miles a day, camped out on my own overnight. And then, really enjoyable recce. It wasn't pushing the pace. I should have learned more from that when I went to do the UTMB recce, because everyone else was doing it in 3 days. It was just too much for me. I just couldn't assimilate the changes. I'm not that strong, so I need time, a bit more time probably to develop the strength and like some of the, because you know, the difference between the 100k runners and the 100 milers, they're big girls, they're strong, you know. I probably needed a bit more time to adjust, but you know, live and learn. So anyway, the first time I did UTMB I was 20th, I think, and then second time I DNF'd. It just came at a really bad time. So we'll see what happens. About 3 days before UTMB, my dog of 15 years had died, and I thought I could probably hold it together, and it wasn't great. But you think you can block it off. But also I trained too hard. I'd raced in Russia about 5 weeks before, raced really hard and done a really hard recce, and I was just too tired. But
You got plans to go back to UTMB?
Well, I'm just going to sneak in under the radar, hopefully. No, but I've got to go back, and I can't finish on a DNF. So.
Yeah, cool. I'm going to be jumping about here a little bit, kind of jumping back to the FKT. Simon Tucker, who's watching us live on YouTube, has asked a question. If you have... any advice do you have for running in the dark after doing the FKT? I don't know, maybe Simon's still doing some training. It's getting lighter now, to 6 o'clock almost, Simon. So, and it's lighter in the morning. So come on, get out there,
basically just get the best head torch you can get. Make it really comfortable. I always think putting a buff underneath your head torch makes a huge difference. Otherwise it sort of moves a bit. And also can give kind of pressure points, gives you a weird headache.
Yeah.
Getting the best. But the running at night is absolutely incredible, because there's nothing else to distract you, and you can hear your breathing and your footsteps, and I think it's a really beautiful experience. But I would definitely get a good head torch. That error.
Is that talking from experience then?
Yeah, after my MDS nightmare.
That kind of teeny tiny e-light just didn't cut it.
And make sure you're familiar with it. Like, so I did a race in Hong Kong and the batteries ran out. Make sure you're familiar with how to change the batteries and how long they last for. Because it came as a complete surprise to me that they ran out, and then I was all a fluster. I mean, I did it, but...
I mean, that doesn't sound like you, because it's like you're saying, I mean, we kind of lost Sam when you were talking about the FKT, about being organised. Because we have kind of skipped it, because you said you're a physio now, but you originally went to do physio university, didn't you? And you weren't successful. You went off into the army?
Yeah, so I tried when I was 18, but I'm not actually that academic, so there's no way. I don't know what I was thinking. I was going to get A's and B's at A-level. So I went, I did a sports science degree, actually, but then in London, and then went into the army because I wasn't going to do anything with my sports science degree. And I thought I quite like camping.
it's a bit more to being in the army than just camping, isn't there, from my understanding?
She knows that now.
So anyway, did the army. I did a year at Sandhurst, became an officer, and then I did short service commission. But I still knew I really wanted to be a physio. So when I left, so my CO at the time, my commanding officer, wrote me a really good report. And from that, I got into Plymouth Uni to study physio. So got there in the end at the age of 28. And then I've been doing physio ever since, and I love it. So.
Oh, good. It's as good as you hoped it would be.
Yeah.
After that, 10 years getting in.
And have you just done a master's as well?
That was awful. I don't know what I was thinking. I think, you know, in order to get up in the sporting world, you do need certain credentials that you just have to have. And I just thought, well, I'm going to give it a go, but really I should... The best advice to doing a master's is do it full time, but I did it part time for 3 years. It was so stressful. I can remember going to a race in Transvulcania, and I had an essay to write, and my race and it just got so merged. I couldn't. You know, there's so much noise in your head at the best of times, but I was trying to focus on a race and also get this assignment done, and I just raced terribly. But you learn, don't you, from things like that. And you think, well, I'll never take work away with me again. And, you know, I got through the Masters, which was, impressive. So I was quite pleased with that.
Brilliant. Was that in physiotherapy, obviously?
Yeah, physio. Yeah, at Bath. So.
And is that what's then opened the door to be able to work?
No, completely separate, actually. Yeah. I saw it on the website, went for an interview and got it. I was absolutely amazed, and it's been brilliant. So now, so the contract's for 18 months, so that will end at the end of this month, and then I'll go back to being a contractor. So as and when they need me or the team needs me, I'll travel with them or whatever. Yeah.
And so, I mean, I think you mentioned before we came on air, we were having a quick chat while we were having issues with headphones, it wasn't the best kind of pre-chat, but it's for the Olympics. Have you been working with some of the Olympic athletes?
So hopefully the Olympics happens for them, because they're, you know, they're still training really hard, and normally they'd be all away on warm weather camps, and they're having to, you know, cycle, run, swim, etc. in all these foul conditions. So hopefully for them. But it's good to see how they train. You know, it's not much different from amateurs. They just got all the time to do it. You know, the same level of dedication is there on all levels, I think. But I just like to see people get out there and doing it. So.
Yeah, they, as I always say, kind of elite athletes just have more time to rest.
Do you know what? As I've got older, I still don't have a problem getting the training in, but you struggle to get the recovery in. I'm like a dormouse most of the time. I sleep a lot.
I always remember hearing about Paul Radcliffe having snoozes in the afternoon. It's like,
that's the dream.
That's the dream. To go running in the morning, have a snooze in your afternoon.
He was lying on the bed with that recovery thing 40 minutes earlier.
Well, that was part of my, got to get that recovery in, haven't you? I was going to say about the kind of how inspiring was it kind of working with Olympic athletes, but Simon Tucker's just posted another question here, which is a fantastic one. And who is your, or do you have an idol or running inspiration?
Do you know what? I got asked that in another interview recently, and I can honestly say I don't. I think everyone in their own way is pretty impressive, because the amount of struggles that people go through just to get out the door to go for a run. I find the everyday person pretty inspiring. People I chat to in my clinic in Exeter, they're incredible. And they you know, they're almost apologetic for wasting your time. And I'm like, no, we've got to get you pain-free. You're seriously in pain here. Let's get you pain-free and running again. Or, you know, or whatever, just going to work again. But I honestly don't have... I do have people I admire. So I always really respected Bruce Tuller, the... Mm-hmm. The marathon he ran across America in the 70s. Yep. I've just finished reading his book. You know, pretty British, stoical, top upper lip, you know, stiff upper lip, but a great runner, and really humble, would talk, you know, talk to anyone. But I don't really put people up on a pedestal to think. I think that, you know, people are incredible, and they make the most out of opportunities. But, you know, like... I just think everyone in their own right is pretty impressive. You just don't know the story, do you? I like, you know, the phrase, don't judge people, you know, from what you see, because behind that wall there's a lot going on.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so true. And Bruce Tully was an amazing coach as well, Coach Richard Noreika, wrote one of my favourite running books, which I still have a copy from the 90s.
Got that book as well.
Yeah, Running is Easy or Easy Running or something, which is just... It's such a shame it's no longer in print, because that was my Bible when I first started road running. It was kind of so important to me. But I'm going to have to check out that book then, if it's about him running across America. But yeah, it's so true, isn't it? How we get inspired by other people. And I was the same in clinic. People would say, oh, I won't be impressed with their half marathon or marathon time. You know, it's like, I would be. You know, I always am. But, you know, because that, as you say, that hard work and dedication, what's gone in. Everybody's on the journey. Everybody's on the same journey.
Yeah, exactly. We're all doing the same thing. You know, but don't get me wrong, I've sacrificed a lot of my life to running now. So people just assume that you're good because you're talented. But actually, it's all the same. It's just hard work.
Yeah.
It's all running is, really, at this level. It's,
How do you approach your training, Jo? Do you have a coach, or is it something that you set yourself? Do you follow quite a strict...
When I was marathon running, I used the club coaches, and then I got a coach, I got a bit put off, you know, in terms of training in a club. It was hugely competitive, and I used to dread the sessions. It was always Tuesday, Thursday night, and I used to almost all day sort of dread them. So I approach my training now that I'm going to fit it in as when I feel happy doing it, which is generally in the morning, get the run out of the way. One, to just enjoy the morning time, but two, if it's a session, just so you don't have to hang around all day. And more recently, I have begun to ask for advice. So in order to get a decent marathon time, I quite like keeping a decent marathon time under my belt, because I want to get good for age. I'd like to do the 6 World Majors at some stage. And it's easier to get in if you've got a good time for your age. So... I've been getting advice recently for marathon off a guy called Alan Story, who's coached a few good marathoners in his time.
Yeah, he's coached one or two.
Alan
Story. Yeah, I think, you know, if people are into their marathon running, will know, recognise the name Alan Story. So that's
pretty impressive. He doesn't suffer falls up like that.
Cool.
He says it as it is.
Brilliant.
He doesn't formalise my whole training, but he'll definitely give me the key sessions to do a week. I don't need just someone to say, like this week I'm so tired, normally I do a session on Tuesday and I've just sacked it off. In fact, I haven't even run today, so I'm going to try and see how I feel tomorrow. It's just last week was busy, and then I probably trained a bit hard at the weekend. It doesn't normally happen like that, but it's someone to say, you know, sound, a sounding board, which is pretty useful. And then I'm just going to think about it. I think, as I move to the trails, I'm going to, swap coaches. He's happy to guide me, but really I want someone to be a bit more specific so I don't mess up any, you know, races are so rare now. I don't want to mess them up. So, I will get a coach and go from there.
Do you keep your training online, or do you have a training diary?
It's still really old-fashioned. It's the old spreadsheet. I don't do Strava because I think it would be really bad for me.
Bad in what way?
I just think every time I came across a segment, I feel the need to have to push it. But and actually, most of my runs are pretty slow. You know, a lot at 8:39 mile pace, slower maybe. So that probably wouldn't help me. And then I'd feel that I'd be pushing my slow runs too hard. And I just don't think I've got the discipline to not feel that pressure. So I haven't gone to Strava yet.
And do you ever use heart rate in training, or is it always kind of on pace?
Heart rate a bit, especially because I train on my own, and I think I probably have a tendency to be a little bit lazy. So in the sessions, I'll say, right, I'm trying to push up to a heart rate I know I've got to get to, and yeah, I like using heart rate. It's also good, you know, why can't you get your heart rate up? You know, good reasoning, you know, to analyse the session, is whether you're tired or just not eating enough carbs that day or something, you know. So, yeah, it's useful.
Oh, sorry, I was just going to ask about the carbs and just ask if there was a particular diet that you followed.
That was my question. Be there as well.
I'm sorry, I didn't need to butt in there.
No, I don't. I literally everything in moderation completely. I eat a normal diet. I actually don't eat meat, to be fair, but that's, I don't eat meat, but I eat fish and I eat everything else. The reason why I said carbs was because I'm really good at burning fat. And to run fast, you need to burn carbohydrate. You need to make that your primary fuel source. So what I've got a tendency to do is do a lot of my runs fasted. So first thing before breakfast, that doesn't work if you want to do a session. You just can't get your heart rate up at all.
Yeah.
And so what I've been learning, especially while marathon training, is to make sure I've had a good breakfast and I need it at least 2 or 3 hours before and consume carbohydrate while I'm training. Not because I feel like I need it, because my body will just go back to its old method of using fat. So that's been quite interesting for me.
And have you learned that just through kind of trial and error yourself, or has that been a more scientific approach?
No, a little bit of trial and error, and also always the feeling that I'm really out of breath on some of the hard efforts before my heart rate's got up there, and I was chatting to people and I'm basically burning fat, so my body is struggling. And I'm thinking, I know I can go faster than this. It's a really weird feeling. So I'm just trying to, play with that a little bit more. Or, I'm running at threshold and, in a park where we come up a hill, everyone else just leaves me standing. And I'm, left slogging up the hill and I can't understand it because I know I'm fitter than them. But really, I can't adapt to use the carbohydrate quick enough. So, I'm just a sluggish runner. So I'm just trying to change that around a little bit. So it's been a bit of a learning curve on that.
Yeah. And is there a marathon that you kind of feel or go ahead that you're going to use this training for, or is it just wait and see?
Yeah, it was meant to happen, but that cancelled last week. I'm going to try, there's a marathon in Gloucester, which happens the same day, but I think because it's on closed loops and they can set you off at 10-second intervals and there's a smaller field, I think that's going to go ahead. So I've actually entered that.
It's August, isn't it? Is that in August? Or
end of April. So same day as Wrexham, I think, Wrexham Marathon. So, we'll see.
And are you aiming for a specific time for the marathon?
I really like to get under sub-3. As to how much I get under sub-3, I don't know. But, sub-3 would be good. I think my good for age is between 3:20 for Boston and 3:40 for New York or something. It's pretty generous, but, the higher up you are, the better, more likely to get in, so may as well go for it.
Have you got plans to do kind of Boston or New York?
Yeah, one day, yeah. But I think you can't do them unless you've proved you've done a marathon recently.
Yeah.
So just to get a marathon under my belt would be useful, and then I can apply and go from there.
Have you done London Marathon?
I've done London, and I've done Berlin, but none of the other world majors, so...
And have you done a road marathon since you started ultra running, or were that all your times from pre-MDS?
Pretty much pre. Oh, no, I did Exeter. So I came back from Kazakhstan, which was 70K, and Exeter was the following weekend. For some reason, I thought it'd be really good to do that. And then that would give me a good for age, which it did. I did 3:04 or something.
Okay, so and you got away with that, or was there any kind of fatigue or lasting?
I was trying for under 3, but I died significantly in the last few miles. But that was fine. It got me the time I needed, but then I didn't get into the, I didn't get a good for age, so place. But yeah.
And then, assuming the marathon goes ahead and races start opening up, is there anything next on your calendar that you could tell us about, or?
So hopefully the calendar will happen. So I've got the race in Finland in May, I really fancy, but just because Finland would be great to go to.
I'll try not to sing the Monty Python Finland song right now, but I'll resist the temptation.
But, that can happen.
Brilliant. And how long's that? How far is that race?
There's loads of different ones. But it will be really close to Mozart, which I'm in June.
Oh, yeah. So is that carried over from last year?
That's a great race.
The first one is Mozart in June.
That's a wonderful race, Mozart.
Yeah, and it's quite runnable, isn't it?
Incredibly runnable.
So that would be perfect.
Just watch for tree roots around one of the lakes.
Oh, gosh, if you can fall over there, Joe certainly can.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Joe, yeah.
I'm only bad with treadmills.
I didn't hit the face. I just did a good kind of cutting of the arm and the elbow and the hip. So
there was a graze.
A bit more than a graze, but anyway. But, yeah. And so after Mozart, then...
So that would be June, July. There is some talk of needing to do a qualifier to see if we can get to the World Trail Champs, maybe July. But and then August, beginning of August, I'm going to Trans Rockies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is a six-day stage race.
Yeah,
that's meant to be an amazing race, I've heard.
Exactly, the atmosphere. So I was due to go 2 years ago on my own. And then this year I've changed it to run with a buddy who I met doing a park run. She's called Sian Longthorpe. So it was finding basically someone to run with. Anyway, we're both going to do it as a team event.
Has she done any multi-stage races before?
No, and not really.
Has she done anything longer than the park run before?
No, good marathon runner.
Okay.
Did a lot of my round with me, but no real one ultra in Devon. So she's good. She's got a strong, good calibre.
But they're not big long days, are they, on Trans Rocket? It's just
no,
very
20 miles a day or so.
Yeah, but it looks absolutely amazing. Absolutely beautiful race.
So yeah. So no, there's that, and then UTMB. And then
it's quite a busy calendar from what I'm hearing.
And then hopefully World Trail Champs, maybe if I get in.
The week after.
So yeah, we'll see.
Excellent. So, yeah, not too many races this year then.
No, just pack them in at the end of the year.
Well, they're carried over from next year. Last year, I mean, so they don't.
Do you know what they are? I'm committed from last year. Really.
Well, that's a problem a lot of people got, isn't it? So
yeah.
Brilliant, cool. We've got kind of two more questions we're going to finish on. We've had Orange Goblin who's posted a question. I don't know if it's better than being a troll, isn't it? Being a goblin online.
They are asking, as someone who runs purely for pleasure, during your training or racing, what percentage of the time do you experience extreme discomfort, if at all? Sounds like you do some harder sessions.
Yeah, I mean... Often, I would really push it two times a week. Any more than that, I used to do it three, and I just can't recover. So that I would find them, one, I get a bit nervous about them, and two, they genuinely hurt quite a lot. but you know, sometimes you can just go out for what you think is a straightforward run, steady run, and everything just aches, or you know, it's pretty. And then sometimes you go out and you feel fine. A lot of it, you know, the body can't really tell the difference between physical and mental stress. So a lot of it is just dependent on how tired you are, what you've done at work, how much stress you've got. Although when we first moved into this house in Dartmoor, we didn't realise that so much work needed to be done. And you know, every run was really. Go for a run for a break, but every run was really actually horribly achy, and you don't realise your body's just tired. So yeah, it's a real mix, isn't there, of what you get out of it. But the times you feel good, you just hold on to them and remember that. And also, you know that you know if you train harder in training, then hopefully the races will feel a bit easier because you know you've buried yourself before. So that's the idea, anyway.
And in races, so have you hit many of those real dark kind of moments of like, this is just pure...
Yeah, God, who doesn't? You just hope that everyone else does, maybe not at the same time, but you hope everyone else does. There are moments when you just think, God, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And in actual fact, that's why I DNF'd at UTMB, not last year, but the year before, because I was just like, I've got 40 miles to go. This is awful. What is the point? And, you know, as you get older, you realise you don't need to prove yourself.
I think we saw you at that race. Was that the same one?
But yeah, I think, you know, as we know, ultra running is mainly mental, isn't it? So
Yeah.
You've got to be fit enough to run a marathon, but after that, it's all in your head. So, you know, make sure you can take yourself to some pretty good places.
Yeah, so do you have any kind of mantras or anything you do to get to that good place?
I mean, I remind myself that I have actually volunteered to do that.
Sometimes paid a lot of money to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And it is actually a privilege, because when you can't run, you realise how much you want to. It is, I do remind myself, I think having been injured a lot, that is a privilege to run, and you should always remember that it's not your right, and that makes me feel quite strong about running. So
brilliant. Excellent.
Are you going to finish on the squirrel question?
Well, we've had a fantastic hour of kind of lots of chats, and we've had some technical glitches and internet going down, which is always good. But we have again on the Facebook group, one question came in, and from Paul Feedy, who said, so on social media, if people go onto Instagram, you're on Instagram, aren't you, and use Instagram quite a bit, but over there you're known as the running squirrel. So why?
So when I first started training for the MDS, we had a border terrier called Rufus, and we used to go into the woods, John, me and Rufus, and Rufus would like head off after a squirrel, and we'd have to sprint after him. And we thought, well, this is quite good fartlek training. Let's not stop it. So we began to call it squirrels rather than let's go and do fartlek training. Let's go and do squirrels. And we'd be tearing off after the dog. And then I said, you know what? If I do well in NDS, I'm going to have to get a tattoo of a squirrel. And so it came about that we deemed that second was good enough. So I had a tattoo of a squirrel. And since then, it was just the running squirrel. But it came from Rufus, the dog.
So if I hadn't got a lazy beagle, maybe I'd have been as good as Jeremy.
Yeah,
the crazy thing is, Rufus really didn't like running. It was just the squirrel thing.
Okay.
He did do a few little runs, but generally it's the squirrels that motivated him.
So was it a love for nut butter, or just kind of sit there sometimes and go?
No. Although I do have that mentality, I can be concentrating on something, and you know, a bit like a dog squirrel. Oh, what's happening? You know.
Easily distracted. Fantastic, Joe.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there we go. Now we know why you are called the running squirrel on Instagram. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks for having the chat. It's great.
And good luck with your marathon and races this year.
Enjoy Trans Rocky, because that's going to be an absolute amazing race. So thank you so much, and stay safe. You're in lockdown, enjoy the rest of your training, and we look forward to seeing how you get on. We'll catch you soon. Take care now. Bye. Well, there we go. What a fantastic evening there with Joe, and sorry about our technical glitches if you've been kind of watching us live and listening along. And if you have been listening to us on podcast and you've liked what you've been listening, please give us a bit of a rating and kind of get us up there. And if you've been watching us on YouTube and you've enjoyed us, please click the subscribe button and keep updated with what we've got coming up. Claire does some other videos on YouTube as well. And if you've got any comments from tonight, please pop them down below and we'll try and answer them as well. So we hope you have a good week.
I was just worried you were asking me who we've got next week, and I couldn't remember what order they're in.
I think, is it Mimi Anderson next week? But don't hold us on that.
There's a 50% chance.
We need to go and check our diaries. We do keep a very organised diary at times, but maybe this is just falling apart a little bit. So it could be Mimi Anderson talking about who's got a fantastic new book out. She is an amazing ultra runner as well. Incredibly inspiring. So please join us next Wednesday, 6:30 here on YouTube. Have a good week, and we'll speak soon.
Bye.
Take care. Bye now.
Hi, it's Claire here. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. These live chats take place every Wednesday evening at 6:30 p.m. UK time on World Ginger Running YouTube channel. And the link is in the show notes. I just wanted to let you know that you can find this and loads more advice and inspiration and gear tests all about trail and ultra running on my YouTube channel, Wild Ginger Running. There are training tips, advice from elite athletes, top coaches, nutritious recipes, key exercises, injury prevention information, and tons of trail kit reviewed, from running packs to poles, waterproofs to head torches, GPS watches, and shoes. And did I mention shoes? I've been going for a few years now, so there's a huge archive of content to help you out with your trail and ultra running. To quickly and easily find the information you need, simply type your query into the Google search box and then write Wild Ginger Running after it. Then Google will show you whatever blog posts or films I have on that topic. Give it a try. And if you appreciate listening and all the information I share on YouTube, you're also very welcome to support me on Patreon, which gets you some additional excellent perks and the chance to win some awesome prizes. For as little as the price of a cup of coffee every month, patrons get discounts, extra films, access to the exclusive Facebook and Strava groups, the chance to ask questions to every live chat guest, plus automatic entry into my monthly competition to win £400 worth of trail and ultra running gear. There are only about 150 patrons, so the odds on a win are way better than the lottery. Interested? Find me at patreon.com/wildgingerrunning. Thanks for listening, guys. Have fun, enjoy your run, and I'll see you on the trails.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.